They'd endured. They'd left more than a third of their forces scattered between where they now camped and the Ithilien Gate. But those who remained were more determined than ever. The plague bells rang day and night now, and the Rotbringers sang hymns to Nurgle's majesty with greater fervour than before. It would take more than hungry ghosts to deter the Order of the Fly from its holy task. Or so they told themselves.
"Well, get on with the story," Kroger demanded.
The warrior was a renegade from the lowlands, clad in battered furs and stained, mismatched armour. He'd led his people in sipping from the fly-blown chalice the very day the crusade had arrived on his doorstep, after first bashing out the brains of his voivode. His skin was already starting to bubble with the blessings of Nurgle, and his warriors had proven to be excellent guides. Even so, Festabite couldn't bring himself to quite trust the turncoat. A man who betrayed one oath might very well betray another.
"Patience is the gardener's virtue, my friend," Wolgus said, stooping to enter the tent.
A scrawny fly monk entered behind him. The zealot wore rough, filth-encrusted robes designed to inflame and infect the sores on his god-touched flesh. The sign of the fly had been cut into his cheeks and brow. Wolgus motioned,
"Please, brother, if you would."
At Wolgus's gesture, the zealot slid his robes down, revealing a wealth of sores and pus-oozing wounds on his back. Festabite was amused to see that the encrustations had taken the form of a crude map. The fly monk knelt before them, proffering the seeping diagram for their perusal. Wolgus caught up a stool and joined them, shooing a nurgling away from the map.
"These are the lands ahead, as near as we can gather."
He nodded to Kroger as he said it.
"The ground turns hilly here. High crags, thick forests, and then, finally, the shivering sea."
He prodded the map, prompting the monk to squirm.
"The savages flee before us, racing to the sea."
He glanced at Kroger.
"No offence, my friend."
"None taken," Kroger said.
"They're not running to the sea. They're fleeing to the Mandible, a redoubt. High, thick walls with mountains on one side and the sea on the other." "I suspected as much," Wolgus said. "The attacks we've endured have been nothing more than delaying tactics, to keep us from reaching them before they're ready. It's to be a siege, then, if we continue."
He leaned forwards.
"Something we lack the numbers for, I fear."
He looked around.
"Who are we missing?" "Bubos and Phlegmaxius both went south a day ago,"
Balagos said.
"Looking for plunder, most like."
They weren't the only ones. Half a dozen chieftains, captains, and champions had gone missing, and their followers with them. Some had doubtless grown bored with the column's deliberate pace and set off to find what loot they could, but the others had likely perished out in the wilderness, eaten by dead walkers or something worse.
"And Tulg the Wide has been gone for nearly 3 days," Festabite said.
The sorcerer had vanished into the north, leading a raiding party against the Drak, one of the local tribes.
"Kroger's woodsman can keep an eye out for both him and the others, though I fear the worst."
Wolgus frowned as he spoke.
"I hoped to be the sword, piercing the breast of our foe. Instead, we are to be the cudgel, battering them until they fall."
He looked around.
"We need a place to make a stand. Our camps are attacked every night by roving corpses. We need walls and time to rest, to let our poxes wax anew. My rot riders spotted a fortress, or what's left of one, on a high crag 2 days' ride to the west,"
Balagos said. He tapped the festering surface of the map with a blunt finger.
"It would make an ideal keep, with a few civilizing touches."
"You'll be dead in a week,"
Kroger said. He sniffed and spat.
"I know that heap. It's already inhabited. And not by anything we'd want to meet. Best give it a wide berth."
"By the garden, are all you Rictors so cowardly?
Balagos said. He slapped the map, causing the zealot to whimper.
Who are you to tell a true son of Nurgle where he might go?
The tribesman grinned blearily at Balagos.
Someone who knows which way the wind is blowing, and the wind from the keep blows foul. Nagash himself cracked those walls, and the spirits of the dead rise wild from its stones.
He looked at Walgus.
This is all Nagash is doing.
Nagash is dead,
Walgus said. The words lacked the power they'd had only a few days ago. Festabite shifted his weight, trying not to think of what he'd seen and heard since then. Nagash wasn't dead, or at least death wasn't slowing him up all that much. None of the others seemed convinced. They looked away from the Blightmaster, refusing to meet his eyes. On that note, the meeting ended. As the others retreated into their stories or a barrel of rot wine, Walgus gestured for Festabite to follow him. He accompanied the Blightmaster out into the yellow slurry of the camp. The snow here had long since melted, leaving only patches of scabrous dirt and fleshy, sweating flowers. Tents made of rawhide, filthy silk and tanned human skin flapped in the wind. The comforting hum of flies filled the air. They'd moved further north since the last attack, and they'd lost more warriors since. It was no wonder the more fragile servants of the Dark Gods had quickly lost their stomach for such expeditions. Every night was full of new horrors. Great bats swooped out of the dark and snatched away horses and men alike. Mournful siren calls rose to brain-splitting shrieks just outside of camp, and come morning, dead centuries littered the perimeter. Though he said nothing, Festabite had noticed that Walgus's earlier fire had begun to dim. The Blightmaster was hard-pressed to keep the disparate elements of the crusade in line, and his mood suffered the worse for it. With warriors dying left and right, wandering off or simply disappearing, their once overwhelming force had shrunk considerably in the mere weeks since their arrival. Festabite and the other knights did what they could to keep the grumblers silent, but it wasn't enough. They needed rest, and time for the mortals to regain their courage. The heart of their current camp had once been a village, but it was in a sorrowful state. They couldn't stay here long.
The hope of a moment is but the foundation stone of everlasting regret, and today's palace is tomorrow's ruin,
Walgus said, looking around. The village had been burned to celebrate their triumph. Despite the devastation, Festabite could still see how primitive it had been. There were no great houses here, as there were in Cankerwall. No high ramparts or boil-domed temples. Instead, it was all huts of stone and fences of wood and bone. What few altars or totems were in evidence had been broken and scattered, or else daubed in those hues blessed of Nurgle.
What manner of god would force his people to live such lives? He said. They huddle in frozen caves, worshipping bones and devouring one another. There is no joy here, no life, only animal persistence.
He looked around.
I cannot understand it. Why do they not welcome us? Are they truly so ignorant that they prefer such stark deprivation to the rank warmth and noisome beauty of Grandfather's garden?
They are savages, good Sir Festabite, and know no better,
Walgus said. He bent and retrieved something from the ashes. Festabite thought it might have been a child's toy before the flames had gotten to it. Walgus dusted ash from it and stood. Still examining it, he said,
That is why we have come, to teach them, to turn them from their false god and to the worship of the true powers which rule the realms. As we have begun to do in Gairan and in Gur, so we shall do in Shaish.
Do you think they will thank us?
Festabite asked. Already thick creepers were winnowing through the snow, and blister flowers were blooming in the ashes. Soon the snows would melt away, and the air would grow warm and thick, the way it was meant to be. The dead on their stakes were rotting now, their flesh blighted by the very wood which pierced it, and the miasma which erupted from them would soon sweeten the air and soil. Walgus tossed the toy down.
"It doesn't matter. The thrust of our crusade, Sir Festabite, remains the same. To free the living from the tyranny of the dead."
"And a most gloopsome endeavour it is, my friend," Gurm said, as his palanquin shuffled towards them on creaking limbs.
Plague-bearers shuffled in his wake, sowing the broken ground with mouldy seeds culled from the twisted Sylvaneth. This place would blossom full in time, vomiting forth the pestilential flowers of grandfather's garden.
"The Lord of all things is pleased. Listen, the flies hum with his blessings."
The demon put one claw to the side of his head in an exaggerated gesture.
"Such fertile soil you have tilled for me, Walgus. I look forward to tending these gardens in the eons to come, for they will yield a magnificent bounty."
"As it pleases you, Herald. We but serve Nurgle's wishes, as any true knight must."
Walgus turned to the demon.
"Kroger's pathfinders say they fled north, towards the sea."
"Just like all the others,"
Festabite added. The demon glanced at him.
"And so, there is only ice there, ice and snow."
"And well they know it," Walgus said. "So why do they flee there? And why do the dead seek to delay us so, rather than simply bring us to open, honourable battle?"
"Who knows why the dead do anything? Nagash is mad, and his puppets are madder still."
Gurm sank back into his cushions, cyclopean eye narrowed.
"Perhaps they lack the strength."
"Or perhaps it's a trap," Walgus said bluntly.
"And so, that's no reason to let them get away, eh?"
Festabite grimaced. Most demons had little understanding of strategy and tactics. They saw no reason not to blunder into a trap, as long as it allowed them to swiftly claim a few more souls.
"No," Walgus said, "neither is there any reason to hurry."
He scuffed the ground with his boot, drawing a ragged shape in the snow and ash.
"The land narrows to an isthmus. We control everything to the south and can fortify the high passes, preventing escape."
"And why would we waste time doing that?"
Gurm asked.
"Because we have plenty of it. What is time to us? We can contain them until support can arrive from further south. Perhaps we shall even call upon my fellow Blightmasters. We hold the Ithilien Gate, after all, and the lands around it. Reinforced, our crusade will surely cleanse the north in Nurgle's name. And while we wait, we will ensure that your gardens grow fast and strong."
"And you think support is coming, do you?"
Gurm leaned forwards, balancing his chins on the pommel of his bale sword.
"Of course. Are we not Nurgle's chosen pestilence? Are we not his blessed infection, thrust deep into the flesh of this realm? Others will come to join our crusade. I ask only that we give them the time to do so."
Walgus spoke so intently that Festabite found himself nodding along with his words.
"And let them share in your rightful glory too, I expect," said Gurm.
Walgus hesitated, then nodded.
"Yes, if need be. The garden is large enough for all. Perhaps those who flee will come to see that, if we but give them time. Even the strongest affliction needs time to flourish. Time is our ally in this holy endeavour, Gurm. Our strength waxes as theirs can only wane."
Gurm laughed.
"Your generosity does you credit, Walgus. Grandfather would surely approve."
He sat back.
"But we have a schedule to keep. We are not builders, we are butchers. We must push to the sea and set this land alight with plague fires. We must make mulch for the garden
and harrow the land so that Grandfather's bounty might spread.
We lack the numbers to hold this land, Herald, Walgus gestured. These delays have cost us more than time. They have cost us warriors, supplies. All that we have left we carry. Our servants are starving, and not even your verdant bounty can keep all of them fed in these conditions. If we press on, we risk losing everything.
And I said, we are not builders. We go forwards, or I go forwards. It matters not at all to me, Walgus. Cringe in fear if you wish. I had thought your order made of sterner stuff than that. But I see that once more Father Nurgle is let down by his mortal children. Oh, how he shall weep when I speak to him of this.
Walgus stiffened.
You would dishonour me?
You dishonour yourself with this moaning of numbers and fortifications. There is a perfectly good fortress waiting for us at Land's End. Let us simply take that one, eh?
And if we cannot?
Gurm scratched his chins.
Then you are buried in a shroud of glory. Kangarwal will echo with the songs of your deeds and those of your loyal knights. Is that not what every knight lives for?
Festabite felt a pang at the demon's words, and he knew Walgus did as well. To die gloriously in Grandfather's name was the secret yearning of every servant of the Order. For those who did would surely be reborn in Nurgle's garden. Walgus grunted and turned away.
Fie on you, demon! You prick my sense of duty!
As a thorn pricks the flesh of a gardener, a reminder of what is and what shall be.
Gam licked his blistered lips and grinned.
Such is my burden, Walgus. I am the voice of the king of all flies, and it is through me that you know his will. And his will is that we press on further, farther, and faster, until all of this realm is his.
Chapter 7. The Crossing. Nagash still endures. While he stands, his enemies shall not prevail. Where he strides, all schemes will come undone. Where he sets his standards, so shall victory be assured for those who follow him. Heed the words of Nagash. The Epistle of Bone. Tamara watched as children chased each other across the ruined forecourt, scattering what few goats and chickens remained in their heedless flight. She smiled, thinking of the days when she and Sarpa had done the same. The smile faded as quickly as it had come, and her hand fell to the pommel of his sword. Even now it was warm with the touch of the lightning which had claimed him. Better the lightning than the plague fire, perhaps. But he was gone either way. Sarpa was gone. Nagash was gone. The world was dying. She could feel it every time she called up the dead or spoke to the spirits. It was all winding down, and there was nothing she could do about it. Nothing at all. Free us. She closed her eyes and willed them to be silent, as Neferata had taught her. The broken kings subsided, if grudgingly. She would be glad when this was done, when she could leave this place and its captive spirits. Let them howl into the wind if they wished, so long as she didn't have to hear it. Sighing, she looked up. The forecourt led to the seaward gate, and past it, the ruins of the once great docks were visible. The prows and masts of broken ships jutted from the ice like tombstones. In the dull light of midday, the shivering sea seemed to stretch on into an infinity of white and grey. Somewhere on the other side of infinity were the Rime Isles, desolate, empty of all human life, and far from the reach of the enemy. It was no wonder that Bolgu and the Fen wished to flee there. The Isles could support the Rictus, though only crudely. They could rebuild, grow, and even prosper. Or perhaps that was nothing more than an idle fancy. If even these harsh lands had been invaded, was anywhere truly safe? She walked as she thought. Warriors nodded as she passed and murmured respectful greetings. Clansfolk offered her choice cuts of meat, jugs of goat's milk and scraps of fine cloth as a show of ritual deference. She thanked them but refused their gifts, as was custom. The people did not serve their voivode. The voivodes served their people. Outside the walls of the Mandible, the full force of the winter wind plucked at her. She shivered and pulled her coat close as she passed through the tumble-down wreckage of a once-proud city. She could smell the midden pits and the plague tents beyond them. The rot-bringers sowed sickness on the wind, and some of the Rictus had fallen ill as they fled their lands. The sick were housed in tents, far back from the walls, where they awaited their turn for their souls to be granted the mercy of death, and their tortured flesh the release of fire. The strongest were tended by lesser shamans and root witches, whose arts were those of life rather than death. They might survive. She crossed the shore and stepped into the ruined docklands. Several of the ice-cutter galleys favoured by the Fens were beached on shore, waiting for the order to shove off. The thick, metal-shod prows of the galleys were curved like axes so as to crack the ice which covered the water and provide ease of passage. If it came to it, the galleys would carry all those who reached them away from danger and to the safety of the Rime Isles. Frost-encrusted wooden planks creaked beneath her feet as she moved along the docks. The remains of broken ships littered the landscape, protruding at odd angles from beneath the ice. When Nagash had come, he had smashed the fleet first, so that none could escape. Only those vessels which had already been at sea had escaped him. Of those that did, only a few survived the zombie merworms and frostdrakes which surged in the Undying King's wake. Some among the Fen whispered that many of those undead monstrosities yet slumbered beneath the frozen waters, waiting for Nagash's call. She stopped at the edge of the docks and looked out over the ice. She could make out the thin figure of Arkhan the Black, still standing where she'd last seen him, his dread abyssal crouched at his side. Beneath the omnipresent crackling of the ice, she could hear the rasp of his voice. He was chanting, though she did not recognize the language. The Mortark of Sacrament frightened her. Neferata did as well, but for different reasons. Arkhan, like Nagash, stood at an implacable remove from Tamra and her people. It was as if he were apart from the natural flow of things, and yet somehow more real than the world around him. She could feel the chill force of his power from where she stood.
"Going somewhere, Poppet?"
a voice called down. Tamra looked up. Adema sat in the canopy of ragged sails and broken masts above, sharpening her sword.
"I wish to speak to Lord Arkhan," Tamra said.
The Blood Knight was always around where she was least wanted or needed. Her fellow Blood Knights, at least, were helping prepare the Mandible's few remaining defences for the battle to come, but Adema seemed to have no patience for such things.
"Now, why would you wish to do that,
Adema stopped her sharpening and looked down.
"What could you have to say to that old bag of bones?"
"It is none of your affair."
"No, it isn't. And yet the question stands."
Adema lifted her sword and peered down its length.
"Are you plotting, Poppet?"
"Do not call me that," Tamra said.
"But that is what you are, Poppet. A new plaything for our gentle queen."
Adema dropped gracefully from her perch. Even in full armour, she made barely any noise when she landed.
"A puppet, a poppet, a play pretty,"
she said in a sing-song voice. "You sound as if you are jealous," Tamara said. Instinctively, she reached out, gathering the spirits which wandered the ice and ruined wharves to her. Adema laughed. "No. Why rage against fate, eh?" She leaned her sword over her shoulder. "After all, soon enough you and I will be good friends, I think. And she'll have a new favourite, our sweet queen. Then we can commiserate over the steaming heart of a freshly lain enemy. Perhaps you'll even join my sisterhood." She swayed towards Tamara. "I'll teach you to use that sword of yours properly. Mayhap you'll teach me to call up the dead." Tamara flinched back as the vampire got close. Even protected by a cloud of dead souls, she could feel the predatory malice radiating from Adema. Was this what association with Neferata led to? The broken kings, Ryken, Adema, all made into monsters. "You act as if I am bound to her," Tamara said. "But when this is done, I will stay and lead my people. That is my fate."
"Keep telling yourself that," Adema said as she walked past. "It might even come true."
Tamara didn't turn to watch her go. Instead, she stepped onto the ice and made her way cautiously over to where Arkan stood. Walking across the ice was treacherous, and more than once she almost lost her footing. It had ruptured in places, and freezing waters bubbled up. She could just make out the shapes of sunken vessels beneath its surface and other less identifiable things. Once she thought she glimpsed movement and picked up her pace. Arkan was facing away from her, and he gave no sign that he'd noticed her approach. His dread abyssal had, however. The bone-coloured monster stirred, and its infernal gaze brought her to a halt. It growled softly, and Arkan said,
"Be at ease, Razorak. What is it you wish to say, Tamara Vendrak?"
Tamara swallowed. She didn't actually know. It had been an impulse. She groped for a question and settled on the most obvious. "Why do you stand out here, my lord?"
"Where else would you have me stand, daughter of the Drac?"
Tamara repressed a shudder as Arkan turned to look at her. There was a clarity to his gaze she found disconcerting. Usually the dead were muted somehow, but Arkan was anything but. "No, I mean," she began.
"I know what you mean. I am communing with the dead."
He turned away.
"I wonder, do you hear them?"
Tamara swallowed. She did. Voices seeped up from below, and dead fingers scratched at the ice which held them imprisoned. "I do."
"And what did they say?"
"They wish to be free." She looked up. "Just like the broken kings."
"The drowned have better chance of freedom than those six."
Arkan thumped the ice with his staff. It cracked and cold water sprayed up. Tamara stepped back.
"Indeed, those the sea has swallowed will soon be spat out."
"You are drawing them up?" It seemed an impossible feat, even for a being as powerful as Arkan. At her most powerful, she had only ever commanded a few hundred of the dead, and most of those had been family.
"Indeed. All of the dead of the Mandible are stirring, ready to fight again beneath your banner."
The leash studied her.
"And it will be your banner if Neferata has her way."
Tamara looked away. "I don't know about that."
"No, you do not wish to know.
These lands have been splintered since the Great Awakening. Nagash, in his mercy, broke us." She heard a harsh rattle and peered at Arkan. It took her a moment to realize that the sound was laughter.
"Mercy? No. Expedience. Nagash detests waste. Why wipe out your people when they can serve better as a lesson to any who might seek to emulate them?"
He gestured.
In those days, rebellions sprang up like flies. The lords of Hellstone, the corsair kings of the Skull Isles, even the Duardin of the Helgrimite Summit, all sought to deny Nagash his due, and all paid the price, but none so great as the Broken Kings.
I think she wants me to free them, Tamra said. She pulled her coat more tightly about herself as a cold wind roared across the ice. Neferata, I mean.
Games within games, Arkan said. It has ever been her way.
We have all heard the stories. The Mortarks are said to speak with the voice of Nagash, but how can they? You, how can one so...
She trailed off. Arkan gave a raspy laugh. We are him, and he is us. But we were all someone else once. In us is Nagash's power made manifest, but so too are his weaknesses. Neferata is his guile, Manfred his ambition, and I...
It was his turn to trail off. He looked out over the ice. What? What are you? Tamra pressed.
I am his loyalty, to others, to this realm, to those he claims as his own. What Nagash has claimed, he will hold until time's last gleaming, even if he must destroy it to keep it.
That is not comforting.
Nor was it meant to be.
Why are you telling me this?
Because I do not believe you will survive, Tamra Vendrak. To stand beside us is to court death and worse. But if you do survive, I wish you to understand what it means to serve him. To fail him. To defy him.
Thank you, she said.
Do not thank me. It is not a kindness.
He looked at her.
Neferata weaves schemes the way a spider weaves webs. Strand by strand until you are caught fast and trapped.
And is that to be my fate?
If you think to ask, then it is already too late.
Tamra inclined her head. I thank you for your indulgence, my lord. I shall leave you to your calculations.
As I leave you to yours, Tamra Vendrak. But let me say this. Neferata is right about one thing. When the time comes and you find yourself at the moment, do not hesitate in your decision. The dead travel fast, and only the swiftest of souls can hope to keep up with us.
Tamra left him there, and as she trudged back towards the docks, she could hear his chant rise anew. Beneath her feet, dead faces pressed against the ice, watching her go. She is a fool, Adema said bluntly. Neferata glanced at her and then back at the ancient map she held. Tattooed onto a now crumbling stretch of tanned flesh, the map revealed the shape of the old city outside the Mandible. It was nothing but ruins now, of course, but it never hurt to know the lay of the land.
Who is, sister?
The necromancer.
There are quite a few necromancers in this citadel at the moment. At least three of them are women.
Neferata traced the line of a side street with her fingernail.
There's a sallyport east of here. We could use that to flank them, if we can get them into position.
You know who I mean, Adema said. She glanced at the map and added, It's too far from the central avenue. It would take too much time to get into position.
Perhaps you're right. And yes, I know who you mean.
Neferata carefully rolled up the map and tapped Adema on the chest with it.
If she were a fool, I would not have spared her life. She is cautious, a good quality in a leader.
Too cautious.
That is a matter of opinion, and we both know that in the end, only one opinion counts.
Neferata locked eyes with the Blood Knight until Adema looked away. The Mortarch relented slightly and stroked her second-in-command's cheek. It was in Adema's nature to be blunt.
There was little left of the young woman she had been, before Neferata had passed along the dark blessings of the soul blight. If we win, when we win, the Rictus will require a guiding hand, someone on whom we, can count. The other voivodes are decrepit, deceitful, or, well, dullards. She is the youngest and the strongest.
So was I, Adema said softly.
Yes, but you were meant for bloodier things, Castellan. Neferata turned away. You wanted vengeance, Adema, war and glory like your sisters, and I gave it to you. The city-state of Sandor might be dust on the boots of the Blood God's servants, but its high-born daughters live to wreak vengeance in its name.
And for that we thank you, O Queen of Blood, Adema said, bowing her head. But she is still a fool. You cannot trust her to make the right choice.
Oh, but I think I can, Neferata smiled. The enemy grow closer by the day. They will be bloody and battered when they arrive, but still formidable. They'll outnumber us 3-1 at least, more than that in the end. There are sorcerers in their ranks, and where sorcerers go, there are demons.
Adema grunted and turned away. Her fingers tapped at the pommel of her sword. Corpse-eaters, death-rattlers and dead-walkers. A pretty army. Why give it to her? Why not just use it yourself?
Who says I'm not? Neferata gestured. You must think outside of the immediate, Adema. We who are eternal must learn to play the long game. Our conquerors will grow weak in time, as all their kind do. We will outlast them and rise again when their grip on the amethyst realm slackens. The seeds we plant here today will have ripened by then, and grown fat on blood and war. The Rictus will march south on that day, and Tamra Vendrak will be at their head.
Adema nodded in understanding.
Satisfied, Neferata looked out over the ruins below, calculating the enemy's approach. The ruins of the city spread out along the shore and the lower slopes of the Wailing Peaks. Once the Mandible had been a centre of trade, and the population of the city that surrounded it had been the highest in the north. 2/3 of its people had perished in what the Rictus called the Great Awakening, and their remains still littered the city below, or else stumbled through the surrounding forests as unusually persistent dead walkers. Neferata closed her eyes, letting her mind drift. She could still remember the smell of the shivering sea in the summer and the cacophony of the Docklands. She remembered standing on the ice wharfs, watching as galleys slid across the turgid waters, sails flapping in the cold wind. She remembered the cheers of the people as the skeletal guard of King Elig Ven Fen marched down the boarding ramps, returning victorious from the Rhyme Wars. Heady days, those. A million little conflicts, all staged for her amusement. How she and Manfred had conspired against each other then, instigating proxy wars at the tiniest provocation. Her pawns against his, and both of them against Arkan, though in truth Manfred had always taken those contests more seriously. Arkan infuriated him on some deep, abiding level. Centuries of confidence and guile would be stripped away with a single, rasping comment, reducing her fellow Mortark to spluttering savagery. Nagash had left them to their games, his mind turned ever inwards, calculating the dread formulas of the corpse geometries. Sometimes he would stir to speak a single word, and a country would die, its inhabitants reduced to raw materials to fuel his continuing studies. Even now she could not grasp the implications of such acts. She did not understand why the Undying King would craft a continent-spanning pyramid of crystallized ash or build strange mechanisms from bone and viscera.
Manfred had confided to her his suspicions that Nagash was attempting to craft portals to new and stranger worlds, or perhaps create secret routes into more familiar realms. Whatever he'd been up to, the coming of Chaos had put an end to both it and her intrigues with Manfred. It saddened her to think of so many plots left undone, so many schemes never to be put into motion. Of course, some she'd adapted and put into play against other targets. The servants of the dark gods were simplistic in their scheming. They substituted complexity and brutality for efficiency, prizing victory over every other condition. And they were almost too eager to turn upon one another, even when it served no purpose. But there was little sport in it, only a sort of satisfying monotony. She longed to match wits with the three-eyed king. There was a foe worthy of her. One who could drive Sigmar back into his fortress realm, crack the soul of the great necromancer, and set all the mortal realms aflame, was surely as cunning as he was dangerous. But first, she had to win the war here. "War here," came the hissing whisper of the broken kings. They fluttered at the edges of her consciousness like frightened birds, and she calmed them with a single word. "Soon," she said. Festabite was tired. He'd dreamed of amethyst fires and a great booming voice calling out to him from the dark. Those blessed by the contagions of Nurgle didn't need very much sleep, but they had to have some at least, and he hadn't had any in days. No one had. Even the animals were on edge. Scab had bitten him 3 times in as many hours, and Balagos had been forced to kill his own steed after it had tried to gut him. Luckily there were plenty of spares, thanks to the attrition they'd suffered getting this far. Too many empty saddles, too many gaps in the battle line. Festabite wondered if this was how the Order's previous enemies had felt when confronted by the unflagging durability of Nurgle's chosen. But now they'd met a foe they couldn't simply outlast, one whose endurance outstripped even their own.
"The dead, our dead, are following us," Kroger said.
The renegade looked exhausted. He'd been in the saddle for 3 days, conducting raids or simply trying to see off the ravenous packs of dead walkers which harried their march. Though he lacked any skill with necromancy, he knew the trick of putting the dead down for good.
"Every corpse we've left unburned and intact is marching in our wake. Luckily, they are as slow in death as they were in life."
They stood with Walgus some distance from a frozen lake, clutching the reins of their steeds. The lake stretched farther than the eye could see, and the land around it was bare rock, covered in hoarfrost. Sparse trees dotted the snowy shore, and birds croaked in the trees. The remains of several great bridges marked the surface, and the ruins of what might have once been some form of fortification stretched out along the shore. And as with every scrap of land in this grim region, there were the stones, enormous menhirs and waystones of all descriptions and sizes. Some were pockmarked with hollow crannies stuffed with skulls. Others were intricately carved with what Festabite thought must be scenes from the history of this land. Rotbringers strained at them, seeking to topple them with ropes and tools. Those that could not be toppled would be shattered or defaced. Nothing which gave glory to the false god Nagash could be allowed to stand in their wake.
"Not luck, Kroger," Walgus said. "It is the hand of Nurgle, stretched out over us. By the time our fallen brothers come seeking our life's blood, we'll be behind the walls of this mandible of yours. Then it will be a simple enough matter to return them to Grandfather's garden."
Kroger glanced at Festabite, who looked away. Since his confrontation with Gurm, Walgus had become almost desperately optimistic. It was to keep the morale of their warriors up, or so he claimed. Festabite suspected that it was as much for himself as anyone.
"Everywhere we look, glorious desolation," the Blightmaster continued. "There, see these bones, the way they are compacted beneath the soil? A road, my friend. And that great menhir half slumped in a copse of trees? A milestone. This was once an empire, if a crude one. And now it moulders in a tomb of Nagash's making, neither crumbling nor rising. That is what we fight, my friends. Stagnation."
"We were mighty once,"
Kroger murmured, half to himself. Festabite looked at him. The rictus shook his shaggy head.
"Once our clans were kingdoms, and our kingdoms ruled the north. From the Shivering Sea to the Black Stones of Stregosev, we were feared and respected."
"What happened?"
"Nagash,"
Kroger said, spitting the name. He made a gesture.
"The Rattlebone Prince strode down from the moon and smote the north, shattering it. He cleaved the land so that the sea rushed all in, and he shattered our cities, driving us into the wilderness."
He scratched at a suppurating nodule on his cheek, picking parasitic flea eggs from the raw wound.
"And now you defy him again," Festabite said.
Kroger shrugged and popped a squirming larva into his mouth.
"We have another god now, a stronger one. Besides, Nagash is dead."
He hesitated.
"Isn't he?"
"As coffin nails," Walgus said, clapping the warrior on the back. "Shaiish stands at the dawn of a new era, my friends, a time of life and growth that will wipe away the dust of death. And we shall plant the first seeds here in the north."
He gestured to a group of plague-bearers. The demons dug seeping trenches in the soil with their swords and sowed blighted seedlings, as they had every time the column came to a halt. As the old order was toppled, the seeds of the new were planted, and the comforting hum of flies was heavy on the air. Still, Kroger didn't look convinced. Festabite couldn't blame him. Walgus was doing what he could, but the whispers had been running through the column for days. Between the attacks and the dreams, the disappearances and the sounds in the night, the Order's once-famed discipline was fraying. They'd come further than any other servant of the Dark Gods, and won more victories, but they were paying for it with every step. Now, with the Mandible but a day's hard ride away, fate, or something worse, had thrown one last obstacle in their path.
"No bridge,"
Festabite said, studying the frozen surface of the lake.
"None anymore,"
Kroger said, and spat. He gestured to the remains of a stone structure, half buried in the ice and snow.
"In my great-grandfather's time, there were 9 great bridges of quarried stone, which spanned the Corpse Run, and towns on either side. But the last of them, bridge and building alike, collapsed during the Bonesnapper Wars, when the Gargant tribes came down out of the Wailing Peaks, seeking marrow and meat."
"Who won?" Festabite asked. Kroger looked at him.
"See any Gargants?"
he said, scratching at his cheek. Festabite laughed.
"Well, the ice might be solid enough to cross if we tread carefully."
He hesitated.
"Or we could go around?" "It would add days to our journey,"
Walgus said.
"Days we cannot afford, according to our esteemed herald."
He gestured towards Gurm, who sat some distance away reclining in his palanquin, surrounded by chortling plague-bearers and a number of knights. Festabite frowned at that. There were too many in the crusade who heeded Gurm's urgings. They wanted to be done with this place, with its wandering corpses and screaming ghosts. They wanted victory, even if it meant death.
"Nor do I wish to camp here," Walgus continued, "not when we are so close to our goal."
He caught Festabite by the shoulder.
We must cross here, but first the ice needs to be tested to see if it can bear our weight. May I have the honour of leading the way? Festabite asked, knowing that it was what was expected of him. The order prized courage in its knights, and the king of all flies looked with favour upon the bold. Walgus nodded. Go, he said. Festabite nodded and swung himself into the saddle. He called out to a handful of other knights, those closest to Gurm, who eagerly joined him as he rode across the flat forecourt of stones, which marked where the bridges had begun. The pillars and posts of the long-demolished structures still rose from the frozen surface, and they had become home to birds' nests and strange purplish mould. The ruins on the shore were in a similar state. Whatever they might once have been, they were now nothing more than heaps of crumbling stone. "Slow and steady, as is the way of Nurgle," Festabite said, as he urged a reluctant scab onto the ice. "No need to hurry, brothers." Most nodded in agreement, but one didn't.
"There's every need, Festabite."
This knight gurgled as he followed him. He was skinny, and his armour hung awkwardly on his starveling frame. Stained bandages hid his face, and he smelled of unguents and spoiled fruit.
"We've got savages to kill, or had you forgotten?"
"The thought is ever foremost in my mind, Rotjaw," Festabite said. "But we are not blood-bound, racing heedlessly into battle. However, if you want to gallop ahead like one of the blood god's own and drown in icy water, more power to you."
"No need to be insulting,"
Rotjaw grumbled. Several of the others chuckled. Festabite didn't. He held Rotjaw's gaze as they continued to ride across the ice. Such disloyalty needed to be dealt with at once, before it could endanger the crusade. "You shouldn't listen to the demon," he said without prevarication. "Any of you." Rotjaw twitched in his saddle. "Gurm is our ally, but he does not speak for the Order of the Fly. Walgus commands us, whether to victory or defeat."
"Gurm speaks with the voice of the King of all Flies. Even Walgus says so,"
another knight said. Sir Reculix was a brawny brute, with a crown of antlers rising from his corroded helm, and his distended intestines wrapped about his middle like armour.
"That doesn't mean he doesn't twist Nurgle's words to suit his own ends,"
a third knight croaked. His rusty armour was shrouded in filth-stained robes, and beneath his hood he wore a mask of bone and iron.
"Sir Blistertongue is right," Festabite said. "The demon is our ally, not our friend. Remember your true loyalties, and the King of all Flies will smile upon you. Have we not all drunk deep from the fly-blown chalice, after all?"
"Aye,"
came the grumbling murmur. Festabite nodded in satisfaction. Scab reared, suddenly shrieking. As he fought to control the beast, Festabite looked down. A great shadow seemed to spread beneath the ice, twin sparks of amethyst flickering in its depths. The sparks grew to suns as the shadow contracted, becoming a titan skull. The rictus grin split in a soundless scream, and the ice cracked with a hiss. Festabite looked around wildly. The others seemed to be having the same difficulties. The ice heaved, and water spurted into the air to rain down across them. Five decaying gargantuan corpses rose wheezing from below the broken ice, scattering the knights. The bone-snapper gargants had perished in the water, and their bodies had been preserved by the cold. Bloated paws slammed down, smashing riders and steeds through the ice and into the dark waters below, Sir Reculix among them. Festabite soared on Scab's reins, turning the horse thing about. He began to gallop for safety. It was a trifle cowardly, but being drowned by the waterlogged corpse of a gargant wasn't his idea of a heroic death.
"Get off the ice!" he roared, riding hard. "All of you, fall back!"
Scab's hooves slipped and slid on the ice as Festabite urged the animal to greater speed.
The ice cracked beneath them as they raced towards the shore, and he could hear the undead gargants smashing their way through the frozen waters in pursuit. On the shore, a shield wall was being hastily erected by the Order's armsmen.
"Loose!"
Walgus bellowed from somewhere behind the wall. Plague fire arrows hissed through the steamy air and arced over Festabite and the others. Normal flames would have found precious little purchase in the waterlogged hides of the monstrous zombies, but the plague fires began to burn greedily, consuming wet flesh as easily as dry. One of the gargants collapsed back into the water, its unwieldy form wreathed in oily green flame. But the remaining four ploughed on, groping for the fleeing knights. Rotjaw screamed as a hand snatched him from the saddle. Ruined teeth snapped shut on the Chaos Knight's skull, silencing his shrieks. Scab's hooves dug into the shore, and the horse thing charged through an opening in the shield wall. Festabite jerked his steed around, Blister Tongue and the other survivors following suit. The four gargants waded onto the shore, water pouring from their decaying carcasses. More arrows thumped into them, and one's whole head was ablaze. But they kept coming. The shield wall held, though only barely. Festering spears and mucus-stained axes bit into the tree-trunk limbs of the gargants as they tore at the armsmen. A wheeled altar to Nurgle creaked forwards, pushed by chanting rotbringers. The sorcerers gathered atop it, unleashed a flurry of arcane bolts. The crackling bursts tore one of the gigantic corpses apart, sending its smoking husk flopping back into the waters.
"Where?"
someone cried. Festabite twisted in his saddle and saw more enormous corpses rise from the waters of the lake. Slowly but surely, they began to haul themselves towards the shore. In the trees, the carrion birds were croaking in unison, and the sound caused Festabite to shudder as he recalled his dreams from the evening before. It was the same voice, he was certain of it, stretched between 100 avian throats. Rotbringers screamed as they were hurled into the air or pulped between colossal teeth. The undead gargants stormed through the ranks, kicking men aside or simply stomping on them. Plague fires ate at rotting flesh, but not quickly enough. Two of the gargants lurched towards the war altar and the half a dozen sorcerers who crouched atop it. Festabite kicked Scab into motion.
"Blister Tongue, the rest of you, follow me!"
he said, and the knights raced to intercept the monstrous dead walkers. Walgus appeared to have had the same idea. Even as Festabite reached the altar, one of the gargants loomed over it. Before it could snatch up one of the cowering sorcerers, the Blightmaster was there, rot sword in one hand and a mace in the other. Walgus chopped through the frayed tendons of the gargant's wrist, severing its hand. His mace snapped out, catching the brute in the jaw. The corpse staggered back, and Festabite let his blade play across the backs of its knees as he galloped past. The creature toppled over.
"Ha! A mighty blow, Sir Festabite!"
Walgus sliced a finger from the